You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line for this American Free Press podcast here on the 9th of January, 2017, is Brianna Bundy. Her husband is Mel Bundy, who's the son of Cliven Bundy, the well-known rancher that had a standoff in the spring of 2014 with federal officials, mainly from the Bureau of Land Management. And many of us have been following that issue off and on over the months. And I'm Mark Anderson, your host of this podcast, roving editor for American Free Press, just to get that clear. And we're going to be talking about some more in-depth matters, as well as the upcoming trials, a little bit about Oregon, but mainly the upcoming trials in Nevada in the latter spring, or the latter winter and early spring, excuse me. And Brianna, thanks for being with me today.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, this is a somewhat complex issue to sort out. I've had two coffees here. I'll try and get my brain firing. But when we were talking off the air, you were explaining a lot of very interesting things, that there really wasn't any jurisdiction for the BLM to be in Clark County, Nevada, in the first place. And that, of course, is where this standoff took place in the spring of 2014. Let's start there, because I don't think many people hear about or think about that angle very much. And if you don't mind explaining that angle, I think it would shed a lot of light on this issue.
Right. Well, it is a jurisdictional matter. You know, the Constitution set up boundaries around a state in order to provide them with sovereignty. And the only way that the federal government was ever supposed to get involved in a state matter is if the citizen or group of people had appealed to their entire state government and they wouldn't do anything. That's the time that the feds were supposed to step in and uphold the law when the state was failing to do so. So the federal government, they consider, it's like 87% or something like that of Nevada's land to be owned by the federal government. And the reason why they think that to be the point is because in 1863, Nevada became a state, but they didn't meet all the credentials to be a state. They had to have so many people living within the borders in order to be called an actual state. So it's what they did, because they didn't have enough people to manage their land. They deeded their properties over to the federal government and asked them to manage it until such time that they had an adequate amount of manpower to manage it on their own. And at that time, they would appeal that decision and regain their full sovereignty. The problem is they never did that. But the issue here is because Clark County, Nevada was never part of the state of Nevada at that time. We were still part of the Arizona Territory. So is what happened in 1866, on May 5th, actually, May 5th, 1866, they decided to enter Clark County into the state of Nevada so that our borders looked a little better. And at that time, Congress granted Clark County full sovereignty to the United States Constitution. So Clark County, if you look at it from the Fed's perspective, have ultimate sovereignty, which means that the Feds had no jurisdiction within Clark County. They can play the little game of, you know, well, we can get involved in Nevada because they never appealed, you know, their sovereignty. But in Clark County, we were granted full sovereignty to the 13 original states. So because of that, Cliven has refused to answer their federal court orders because they don't apply to him. He is in a sovereign, basically he's in his own little country out here, and he understands the Constitution well enough to realize that the federal government has no control within a sovereign state. His sheriff has always supported him, and he has deeded state rights to 11 springs in Clark County on his range. So because of that, he's not going to allow the Fed. The feds came in, you know, with the whole motto, cattle free by 93, and they came into Clark County and they pushed the other 52 ranchers out. And the way they did that is they bullied them to the point where they could no longer handle the abuse. So then the feds came to them with a contract, and it was a willing seller, willing buyer contract. And it was to buy their water rights from them, which you have to have water rights in order to graze cattle. So they were gonna have to remove their cattle, but they weren't giving them any money. It was I think it was like $60,000 for their water, which isn't even enough to buy a decent truck. Well, Cliven didn't care about $60,000. He was raising a family and it was his livelihood. And so he told them, no, thank you. Well, they got angry because he refused to be a willing seller. So they said, fine, we'll just come and take it. And so he told them no multiple times. And then he told them, hell no. And so at that point, the abuses ramped up. They started sending him subpoenas to go to court and all this stuff. And he just said, no, I'm not going. You don't have jurisdiction over me. And if I enter your court, that would be the same as you and I getting in a fight, walking into the courtroom, and the judge walks in, and the guy that picked a fight with me is now the judge. So because of that, he didn't see that a federal court, first off, they had no jurisdiction to take him to federal court. Second off, he wasn't about to be railroaded by a gang. So anyways, that brings us to where we are today, is our stand for 25 years has always been jurisdiction. The federal government does not have jurisdiction according to the Constitution within a sovereign state. And we consider Clark County to be sovereign, and so does the United States Congress.
I think that above all, Brianna, is the fundamental point, because once that is established, everything else just kind of doesn't really measure up to that. If they don't have jurisdiction to begin with, then it just sort of it settles the matter, at least from a legal constitutional standpoint. And then it's just a matter of the federal government exercising arbitrary power, it seems, because this conversation came up off the air when I said, well, so much of Nevada is owned by the federal government that how can you even call Nevada a state, really? I mean, it's 80-some% federal land, but here Clark County is the exception. I'm assuming that must have been the most populous, you know, the highest population as Nevada developed, that most of the people must have congregated there, I suppose.
Yeah, the Mormons had a big hand in that, because they settled this whole southern Nevada area, Las Vegas, Mesquite, all these little towns leading up to it, on actually January 8th, 1886. So about 5 months prior to them being made part of the state of Nevada.
In other words, the feds are basically treating this as if that never happened, and that this is just some sort of open federal range where you guys are, the Bundy family and others, are mere occupiers. Would that be a fair, if somewhat crude, summation?
Well, I think the real problem here is that the federal government has become so powerful, and our politicians have been lazy and not understanding their oath of office that they were elected to. And they're not standing for our rights because they don't know what rights to stand for. You know, this all could go away a long time ago if we had a decent governor that would be elected into power that would just tell the feds, get out of my state. We have enough people to manage our own lands, and we're going to do it on our own. The federal government is so busy growing these enormous bureaucracies to create power and control. But in order to keep those bureaucracies moving forward, they have to rob from the producers because they don't produce a product. Our federal government produces nothing. So where do you think their growth is coming from? It's coming out of yours and my pockets.
Yeah, certainly. And power is their currency, you might say.
It is, but they use their power to take our currency, whether it be fines and permits or rules and regulations that they can also fine you on, to a product by taxation that you're producing in order to provide for your family. They find a way to rob from each and every one of us so that they can support their power and control.
So this is the interesting thing, ladies and gentlemen, those listening to this podcast, that led up to the Bunkerville standoff, as the media called it, in the spring of 2014. Of course, there's some connections to what happened in Oregon at the National Wildlife Refuge, which was basically unoccupied, and Ammon Bundy and others, of course, had the civil disobedience there to protest what had happened in some other matters regarding land rights. That's the Hammond brothers, right? I believe.
It's a father and son.
Father and son Hammonds. Excuse me. There's a lot to sort out here. But sticking with Nevada, before we get into some of the details of what's going on in the upcoming Nevada trials, and we'll say hello to the young one there.
I know. Sorry.
That's okay. Good morning. No problem on my end. Tell us a little bit about State Representative Michelle Fiore, I think her name is. I believe she's tried to help.
She has. And Michelle and very few others have been very diligent in trying to help us. In 2015, Ammon, for much of 2014 and 2015, Ammon wrote a bill that he took to the Nevada legislation. It was called AB 408. And in that bill, he did the very thing that Nevada was told to do back in 1863, and that was to challenge the federal government's ownership of these lands. And it was to restore our sovereignty as a whole state. So he spent a couple $100,000 and months and months away from his family. AB 408 was actually the number one bill in the state of Nevada's history, voted on more than any bill. And Michelle Fiore was a big help to him in getting him through that whole legislative process. It turned out in the end that the rest of our liberal legislation wanted to make so many changes to the bill that on the last day that it was in session, Ammon squashed it because it was giving the federal government more power over the state of Nevada than the other way around. And so we killed our bill, so that was pointless. But Michelle has continued to try to raise awareness on our situation and to get our representatives, not only our state representatives, but our all of our government officials involved in this matter.
Trying to get the governor involved, trying to get your members of Congress involved. Senator Harry Reid, good luck with that, right?
Right. He's a lot of the problem here, but his reign of terror will soon be over. So God forgive his soul, I guess.
Yeah, is he stepping down after his term expires, or what do you mean by that?
Yes, he retires. This is he's done now. We've elected a new senator, which is I don't know how thrilled we are about that, because he's Harry Reid's little puppet. So I'm sure his terror will just continue, but in another man.
Oh, forgive me. I guess I was under the impression that those like Harry Reid are evergreens that never stop tormenting us. I happen to miss that he didn't make it back in there to the Senate. Well, I guess.
Well, he retired. Yeah. He retired.
Well, then he stepped down voluntarily. That's big of him. Well, very interesting. Yeah. Why is it, real quickly, that bill to get the sovereignty of Nevada straightened out, that bill in the state house. Why is it that that bill went bad? You're describing something that started out promising and kind of went off the rails. Why did that happen?
Well, see, because it has to go through a whole process. It has to go through a whole approval process. And so we went up to Carson City, our entire family and a lot of supporters, and we presented the bill to legislation. Most of the northern representatives loved and supported the bill. However, the problem is when you have a county like Clark County and, you know, I think it's Washoe County, like where Reno's at, they are very liberal and they get a lot more votes than us out here in the boonies get. And so is what happened is there was so many that didn't like it because probably people like Harry Reid and so on convinced them of how bad it was. And then they like the power and the control from the federal government because it's job security for them. So is what happened is it goes through this this approval process where the legislation gets to tweak things if they'd like. And they put in so many ands, ors, and buts that it appeared as if the bill was still pure and held its integrity. However, we understand, and Ammon is smart enough to realize that the ands, ors, and buts were critical because it perverted the entire integrity of the bill. So finally, he would not allow it to go forward, and he killed it himself, said no. This bill will no longer be, if you can't keep this bill in its original form that it was presented to you, then we will no longer carry forward. We'll fight this another way.
So anyway. AB 408 of any version is a dead letter right now. There's no existing bill of that nature that people can call Carson City about and say, hey, you need to revive this and fix it. It would have to be reintroduced. Is that accurate?
Yes, it will. I'm sure there's a record of the original that you can find and read. But it's no longer an active bill in the United States legislation.
Or in Carson City of any, there's.
Yeah, it's no longer, he completely killed it, said, nope, I'm taking it away. So it's no longer, like if you called there and asked about it, it wouldn't be in their records, so they wouldn't have anything to tell you.
Okay. Well, we'll follow that. I'll check the Nevada State Legislature website. And usually I do an article with these podcast postings, and if I can find something accurate from Carson City, I'll post a link.
Right. And you can also, I have a copy of it. If you text me or email or whatever, I can just forward you the original document.
Oh, the electronic file. Okay. That would be very helpful. Yeah, I would want readers and listeners to see the unadulterated document. And I think that's important to capture the essence of this. Again, getting to the foundation of this, not just going over the standoff from the spring of 2014 in Bunkerville between BLM and Cliven and some of his family and all that happened there, although we'll get into some of those circumstances in a minute. Let's talk, before we finish off with what's coming up in the Southern District, federal Southern District courts, coming up this early spring, the trials and whatnot. Let's talk a little bit about what happened in Bunkerville, but maybe something that maybe people didn't hear about quite so much. You were telling me off the air that people going about their business that weren't even connected to your family, as well as others that were seeing evidence that the Bureau of Land Management shooters, sharpshooters, snipers, whatever you might call them, were putting their viewfinders on people, which shows the characteristic laser pointer. And of course, not firing, but that people were saying that they saw these laser finders on, you were saying even on children and on people in that area at
on their children
around that time. Describe that a little bit, if you would.
Well, see, they just came in like, just a rogue army, you know, like in the night. I don't even know when they showed up. They were just there out of nowhere. They were all over the foothills, all surrounding the ranch. They were on the mesas across from the ranch. They were everywhere. They were out in the desert. They were up on the hills. It didn't matter where you went. There was somebody there making sure that no one stepped off the asphalt, you know. Anyways, our kids, we could see two heads up on top of the foothill above the ranch, like down, you know, peering down. You can see them between the trees, like straight down into the front yard if you're up on that hill. Anyways, just, you know, the babies running around in the yard and, you know, red dots. My sister-in-law's were pulled off the side of the road videotaping the feds coming down off the mountain with all of our water troughs in the back of their trucks and all of the destruction and equipment that they were bringing with them. Anyways, they had their babies in the back of the car that were watching a DVD, and, you know, then here they go, guns drawn on them, pointed at the kids, pointed at them, told them to keep their hands in the air, that they were authorized to shoot. Some young boys were also held up. I think they were like 15 and 16, I'm not sure. But young enough, like one barely had his driver's license, you know. Anyways, they were held at gunpoint, even told that they would shoot them if they moved another step, and they had authorization to do so. Men, old men, inside our gas station / we call it the coffee shop, but there's some little benches in there where the old guys sit in there and drink coffee and, you know, tell baloney stories. But they were sitting in there, and they asked the BLM as they were coming in to get food or drinks or whatever, what was going on down there, because, you know, they'd been hearing it. They're like, what's going on down there? Anyways, they started questioning them. Well, they got angry, and they pulled guns on these old men and told them to shut their mouths, and they backed out of the doorway. Like, they were so, Kate, this is what people don't understand. I don't believe that these men that work for the BLM are bad guys. I think is what happened is somebody hyped these people up so bad that they really were fearful. I think that whoever was in charge of this whole ordeal had told them the most horrific things that a person could make up. And so these people were just pumped full of, like, testosterone and adrenaline, that they came down and they were just, they were complete monsters. But I don't know, some of them told us in communicating with them, some of these BLM officers told us that they were scared to death because of what they had been told about our community. We're just people like you and me, just driving our kids for a picnic or, you know, going grocery shopping. So the evil is not coming from, you know, like these little workers at the BLM. It is coming from the higher ups. And I know that this is true because it's just like the U.S. Marshals. When the U.S. Marshals apprehended my husband, they came in with a team of 30 men that jumped out, that were dressed as construction workers, that jumped out of freezer box trucks and stormed his work job site, took his boss to the ground and all of his boss's employees, hit my husband in the head with their gun, knocked him down from behind, and drug him off into some U.S. Marshals van and took off. Then they continued to question and abuse my husband's boss and his employees for almost 2 hours. In the vehicle traveling with the U.S. Marshals, the U.S. Marshals told my husband that they had been following him for almost 3 weeks. And my husband said, well, what did you observe in all this time that you followed me? And they said, well, we found you to be a very good dad. And Mel asked him, well, why did you come in with such force on me? You guys yelled out, which one of you is Mel Bundy? And I came out around the truck and said, I am. I wasn't fighting you. Was I being aggressive? And they said, absolutely not. My husband put his hands in the air and said, I am. I'm right here. So for you to come in with such force, what caused that? And the U.S. Marshals told him that the briefing that they had got was so intense, they really thought that they were dealing with a monster. And my husband's attorney said the same thing. He said, he's a public defender. And he said, I was scared to death to be in the same room as your husband after going through what the prosecution had told me about you. And he said, when I came, and his attorney told this to me, he said, when I went in and I sat down with your husband, I couldn't have been more wrong. He said, I thought I would go in and find, and he said, excuse my adjectives here, but he said, I thought I would find some backwoods radical hillbilly. And instead, I found a soft-spoken and mild-mannered man.
Yeah, the outright demonization, almost as if this was a domestic version of ISIS, white supremacists, right, or, you know, some sort of KKK knockoff or whatever image they were given, like you say, by their managers. That's certainly the way it comes out, you know, total demonization. And
they have, you know, and they're not seeing who these men are. They're listening to our phone calls every day in jail. I'd like them to play a few of those phone calls for the American people. My husband calls home and sings like the ABC song to his baby. You know, he talks about what they learned in school today and tells them that he loves them and asks them if they look pretty for school, you know, if their hair, how their hair looks today. You know, I mean, he's just a regular daddy of five little girls. He lets them paint his fingernails and has no hesitation in wearing pink fingernail polish to work. He has a My Little Pony keychain that's hung off of his backpack. And yeah, he's a big tough cowboy, but he's the father of five little girls and the most gentle man that I have ever seen in my life. Well, they all are. Every one of these Bundy men. It's nothing to see them curled up on the floor with five or six kids laying on their chest while they're listening to the radio. They're just regular people.
Yeah.
Clinton doesn't even own a gun.
You know, see, there you go. It's amazing. You know, and I've heard of similar things. People that believe in the Second Amendment aren't even necessarily gun owners. And
right.
Yeah, I think that there is this demonization, and the lower underlings with the BLM and whatever other federal agencies were out there aren't necessarily directly at fault. They've been propagandized in their mind. And I think you hit a very important point in what you've just described. Now, when they were doing this viewfinding with their guns, this was even before the final standoff, right? Wasn't this as far back as March?
Yeah, I think they came in like around March 26th, and they came in before the contract cowboys showed up. They came in and set up and secured the whatever they called it, the operation. They secured the operation prior to allowing the contract cowboys and them to come in.
And what are the contract cowboys, for the record?
The contract cowboys are the men that the federal government paid with our tax dollars $1 million to gather up Cliven's cattle.
Oh, they needed people that had the skills, so they contracted out to them and paid them a cool million. My goodness.
Well, and the deal is these are not real cowboys.
Oh.
The real cowboys live by an oath.
Yes.
And if it's not yours, don't take it, you know? And it's a very, cattle rustling is a huge offense in the Western community. Actually, in the state of Nevada, it's still a hanging offense, but obviously hasn't been acted on in years and years. But these were wannabe cowboys. These are, the city boy type that wanted to put on a pair of, you know, bedazzled Wranglers and pick up a rope and, you know, pretend to be a cowboy for a day. These may have been rodeo cowboys, maybe, but these were not ranchers, because no rancher, actually multiple ranchers called us and said, hey, the feds contacted me wanting me to come gather your cattle, and I told them no. They tried to contract people out for a few years to come and do this job. And when they found that not a single rancher in the Western United States would do it because it was morally wrong, then they, you know, actually put a contract out and people could make a bid on it online. So a bunch of, you know, rodeo cowboys that needed some entry fee money decided to come and do it.
Yes, I've made fun of that type before. They put a cowboy hat on and suddenly they right. think they're a cowboy. Yes.
Yeah, like you know, some crinkled up cowboy hat. And, you know, that's not a real cowboy. Not where we come from.
Wouldn't know one end of a horse from the other.
Right.
A couple other just factual things. How much land is in Cliven's ranch there in Bunkerville in that corner of Nevada? How large is the ranch?
Cliven's ranch that he owns, the property, like the physical, like he owns the earth part, is I think it's about 100 acres. However, his grazing rights are for, I don't know, it's probably like 64,000 acres or something. I don't know how much it is, but it is, he owns 11 springs that run all along the mountain, and each one of these springs give him one allotment, and I think each allotment is like, I don't even know, it's a lot. It might be closer to, at one time they said it was, or did I say 64,000? I meant 640,000.
Okay.
At one time, I think that's what I heard that it was 640,000 acres. But it's all, each one of these springs, based off of the amount of water that those springs produce.
Yes.
You get so many head of cattle for each one of those springs. So he, because what he does is he, in order to, and those cattle can range on this big, huge portion. So is what he does to spread out the food so it lasts longer. He pipes the water down off of the mountain down into the valley. And then not only his cattle benefit from it, but all of the wildlife benefit. Since the BLM came in 2014 and they destroyed all of our watering systems that took over 100 years to build and, you know, maintain, there are no longer deer, rabbits, pheasants. We used to have turkeys. They were planted, but they were thriving. They're all gone. You don't see deer down lower like you used to. There was actually a time when there used to be antelope down in this valley, but they've done so much destruction by pushing these ranchers out of these area where the antelope were at. Nobody ranches there anymore, and so the waters haven't been maintained, so the antelope have left and the deer have went back up on top of the mountain, and the coyotes even are, you know, they're getting diseases and they're dying because they're not being able to travel for water. So there's inbreeding taking place, and then there's no, the rabbits are getting diseases because there's not predator control where they're at. It's a huge crisis for the entire environment. And they call themselves land managers, but is what they are is land mismanagers, because they are bringing destruction. And because people don't visually see it, they don't understand what's taking place. But for us, that this is our heritage. We've lived here. Even I have lived here my entire life in this valley. So I know these mountains as well as Cliven and his kids do. The wildlife just in the last 2 years has diminished to the point where, I mean, it's going to take years and years to train this wildlife to know that, hey, I can come back here. There's water here.
That's another stunning episode in this overall saga, Brianna, what you just got done describing, along with the gun sites and the training guns on innocent people and children, along with the history of the sovereignty of Clark County. These are fundamental issues that the mainstream media largely, if not completely, misses. And even some of the alternative media, I don't think quite gets all that, or it's too piecemeal, whatever the case might be. You know, that's pretty profound, just that alone. You know, we're told the EPA and the BLM and the Forestry Service, and you know, that they're these supreme environmentalists, that the, you know, delicate and precious aspects of our common heritage in the environment are being dutifully preserved. And here we have a clear example from what you're telling me that that is definitely not the case, that this is environmental degradation on a very large scale. And a killing off of wildlife. Very sad.
It is. And it's a huge problem, you know. I mean, you just for an example, like, you know, these two big national monuments have come through this last, well, 2 weeks ago, Bears Ears and then this Gold Butte, that they've made a national monument. And you think about that.
I was just going to bring that up. Yes.
Right. And they talk about it. They're like, oh, this is pristine land. It's so beautiful out.
And we may have lost you. Are you still there? Hello?
Do you think that it's, that it's, yeah. So how do you think that it is still so beautiful? How do you think it's been preserved for this many generations? It's because somebody has been there. Whether you see them or not, somebody has been there managing the waters, managing the logging, managing the, you know, I mean, there's been somebody there. And then is what, so then they come in and is what these national monuments do is they restrict. They say, nope, you can't come in here and log anymore because we need to save these trees. And so then is what happens is the trees get diseases and the trees die and then the forest burns down because you have to, that's what people don't understand. The ranchers are the biggest environmentalists that you, the ranchers and farmers are the biggest environmentalists that this country has. And you wonder why these forest fires and these mudslides are happening all over the country. It's because there's no longer anybody managing this. It's just like, the grass, the cattle and the sheep and the goats and, you know, whatever, they graze the grass. They nip off the top and they nip it off and they keep the grass down. So the grass and even the bushes, they eat the bushes and they keep it trimmed off. So then is what happens is the bush stays small, like its original intent. It stays small, but the roots are large. And so then when it rains, that tree is able to bush out and be beautiful the next year. If you look, go to an area where there hasn't been something grazing there and you look, the bushes are a lot bigger and they're a lot fuller, but mostly they're dead. The whole bottom of the tree is dead. It's only green on the top. Mm-hmm. And that's because nothing has been trimming it off. Just like you trim your bushes and your trees outside to keep them full and beautiful.
Yes.
That's what the cattle are doing. And also this livestock, the mudslides in California are a huge problem because the state of California has allowed almost all of their cattle to be taken off the land. California had one of the largest amounts of cattle than anywhere in the country. And they're no longer there on the side of these hills and on these mountains. So is what happened. When the cattle are walking around grazing, they're not only aerating the earth, which is keeping it healthy for new regrowth, but they're compacting that soil down tight. So then when it rains, it's compact.
It doesn't run off. Nothing, yes.
Right. So now nothing's been there. So is what happens is it builds up, and then it slicks off because there's nothing to compact it into the earth. So we're having these disasters that are happening all over are not Mother Nature. They are a lack of care for our country is what is going on here. Yeah, Mother Nature plays a role, but we have been entrusted this earth to love it and care for it and to keep it healthy. And we're not utilizing it. And because of that, bad things are happening. People's entire livelihoods are burning up. Lives are being lost. Because of overregulation, and it's causing the demise of an entire way of life. I mean, we can't even, you know, over 70% of our beef comes from out of the country, and another 20%, you know, we don't even know where it comes from. It's probably, you know, our food industry here in the United States comes from three or four people. That's it. We used to be the land, like the United States has enough good ground and the capability to feeding the entire world. Yet we produce nothing. We produce nothing anymore. Because yeah. We've allowed these environmental agencies to post these cute little pictures of all these little endangered animals all over and to fill your minds with all this propaganda that man is bad. Man is not bad as long as he is respectful and you know, he's providing for something, you know.
Very interesting. Yeah, and my quick comment on that would be, it's this biosphere Agenda 21 mentality where right. we're supposed to have this democratic biosphere where man has no more inherent rights than a snail darter, where a human being has no more right. inherent rights than a flea. And this is that radical environmental agenda. But what it misses, as you're saying, Brianna, is the idea that the land needs husbandry. It needs intentional conservation. There needs to be a sense of stewardship. There's the word. Stewardship of the land. And that has to happen. The mere absence of human beings on an expanse of land is not the answer. And that's what we're told, is that if wherever human beings do not tread, the land will automatically be healthier, which is an absolute myth, demonstrable again and again and again. The other side has no proof of their assertions. There are endless examples of what you're saying holding true. That I can attest to.
I could go on for hours and hours of examples and things that, and this isn't just like I'm making this stuff up. These are actual studies that have been done to prove that man is good. Man is good. And there's no better steward of the land and no bigger environmentalist than the rancher and farmer. You think about it. If the land is not healthy, they don't get a paycheck. They have to keep the land healthy in order to provide not only for their family, but to fill their contracts. They have to keep it healthy.
Absolutely. Just steering this a little bit, I want to make sure it's crystal clear before we do a summation on the upcoming trial. That wasn't it December 28th, didn't you tell me off air, just to get this out there again, that the New Butte Gold National Monument allotment, if I'm getting that name right, if I butchered it, pardon me, but didn't Obama enact that through those agencies December 28th, 2016, something like 1.4 million acres?
It's 1.9 million acres.
Well, that's
for the Bears Ears Monument that he declared that day. Gold Butte, it's only about it might be about that 1.4. I'm not really sure. It's a lot. I don't know. It's our entire, I'll tell you this. It's the last piece of land in all of Clark County that was still free to travel by ATV.
And name those two again. You said New Butte.
Bears Ears. Yes, nobody's ever heard of it before.
Like the ears on a bear?
It's in Utah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Bears Ears. It's in Utah, San Juan County.
And New Butte is in Nevada.
Yes, Gold Butte. And Gold Butte, Clark County.
My notes are a little sketchy here. Forgive me on that one. Okay, now, cutting to the chase, in the wake of the April 2014 standoff, as it's called by the media, and, you know, the BLM came in, the things in the mainstream press were that Cliven hadn't paid his grazing fees and that there was this big, you know, shortfall of payment to the federal government. This is what the claims were in the press and through the government. And all the arrests were made. You described how they apprehended your husband, Mel, one of Cliven's sons. And to get into the topical thing now, I understand they broke up the Nevada trial into basically three trials, and that
they did.
Yeah. And that the one with Cliven Bundy, Ryan Bundy, Ammon Bundy, the journalists Pete Santilli and Ryan Payne, that one will be second, partially yes. because Cliven requested that people that are quote unquote less culpable or less, you know, they were the least involved, he wanted them to go first so they wouldn't sit in jail waiting for Cliven and company to be tried first. So Cliven was being very gracious there, as I can see. But so when will Cliven, Ryan Ammon, and Pete Santilli and Ryan Payne be tried? Your understanding is in April. Do you have any more details on that, when that trial might start?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I wanted to continue on with what I start before I broke off. So I wanted to clear one thing up for the record.
Yes, go ahead.
Cliven never owed any grazing fees.
Okay.
Our representative from our Nevada BLM, our Vegas office, came here, and that was openly asked in a public board meeting, a community board meeting, as if Cliven owed grazing fees. And his response was, how do you charge somebody for a service that they haven't been provided? He didn't owe us any money, but now that we're back, he will start to owe us money. So is what happened when I read, you can go online to the BLM's website and you can read their press release from April 12th, 2014. Mm-hmm. In that press release, it clearly states that the $1.1 million that the media was talking about, they didn't say that the media was talking about it, but the $1.1 million was the amount of money that it cost to perform this operation. So the BLM's intent was to charge Cliven for their excessive roundup. We never owed them a grazing fee because when Cliven lawfully fired them in 1993, he fired the BLM. Never once after that day did they step foot on Cliven's range until April of 2014. So you can't pay a grazing fee. Is why you pay a grazing fee is because if the BLM is managing your lands, you pay them so many cents per cattle for the year or for every day of the year that they were grazing. And that's supposed to pay the BLM agents wages for the year. It's a, you know, a service like you're paying for a cleaning lady or a security company or whatever. That's that they hadn't been there, so they can't charge him for that. And then to carry on, so yeah, we're thinking the first trial is all of the men from Idaho and a couple, I think they're from Arizona, that the feds are calling gunmen, which is wrong, and the judge openly stated in court that they could no longer use these words such as gunmen or, you know, these negative words to describe these men. But yeah. they go to trial February 6th. So, but then is what happened is this day before yesterday, the judge came out and said, well, even though I said in court that you could no longer call them these things, I'm going to allow the prosecution to call them these things in court. Just, I'll just give the jury instructions to ignore them.
That seems kind of sketchy, to say the least. This is the group involving, including Todd Engel. Is that that group of men that start February 6th?
Yes, it was all the men that were on the bridge or in the wash that exercised their Second Amendment right responsibly.
And that would be then Richard Lovelian, Todd Engel, Gregory Burleson, those guys, correct? Eric Parker.
Yeah, Eric Parker, Steve Stewart, and Scott Drexler.
Yeah, yeah. I've got Stephen Stewart and O. Scott Drexler. And then second would be your father-in-law, Cliven, Ryan Bundy, Ammon Bundy, Pete Santilli, the journalist, and Ryan Payne. And then last but not least would include your husband, Mel Bundy, Dave Bundy, Joe O'Shaughnessy, Brian Cavalier, Jason Woods, and Micah McGuire in that order,
yes.
With your father-in-law being second. Again, do you have any handle on the exact dates for Cliven's trial or just sometime in April is your understanding?
Yeah, it's just we don't know for sure because is how the judge ruled it is the first trial as soon as it the verdict comes in, then a 30-day clock will start. When that 30 days expires, the second trial will take place, and then that will be the same, you know, pattern that it will take for the third trial. So the attorneys are projecting that this first trial with the gunmen, C is what they call them. Oh, it makes me sick to even say that. Anyways, these men that came to protect our family, if the need arose for it, they project that their trial will last somewhere around 2 to 3 weeks.
Throughout,
then,
yes,
you know,
we're not really sure.
They were there. All these men that are going to trial at this first trial were at the ranch for less than 12 hours. Most of them arrived the morning of April 12th, and they just came down because it was a weekend. They didn't have to work because they were all employed, very good jobs, you know. So they came down for the weekend to find out more about what was going on, and then check out these Second Amendment areas that, or First Amendment areas, I mean, that they had made for the community, where you weren't allowed to protest unless you were inside this box. So they came down to check that stuff out. And then another thing that people don't realize is the custom and culture of the West is everyone carries a gun. You can go to any truck pretty much in town, any gas station, and you can ask any person that lives in these communities that isn't, you know, traveling through or whatever, if they have a gun in their vehicle. I dare say that over 70% of them will say absolutely, from little old women to teenage kids. Everyone carries a gun. It's a way of life. I was raised carrying a gun because you never know if, you know, you're going to need one. You've got mountain lions, you've got, you know, coyotes, and coyotes are actually, you don't have to have a license to hunt coyotes. They're a predatory animal, and we're very overrun with them in Nevada. And so the fish and game, Nevada Fish and Game, will actually pay you if you shoot a coyote. You can take the ears in, and they will pay you because they keep the population, it keeps the population down so that the game animals can thrive.
Okay.
So everybody carries a gun around here.
So these guys come in, it's nothing unusual to be armed around there, as you're saying, but Todd Engel,
right, so
Gregory
they had
Wilson,
guns in their pickup.
Right. And so their trial will take place the better part of February, allow for 30 days.
Right.
That gets you through most of March, if not all. And so, therefore, Cliven and company are looking at April for their trial. Then that ends, and then another 30 days, and then the final group of the three tiers, the three groups, 17, 18 men divided by three. We won't get into the Oregon affair right now. I know that there's another trial going on in Oregon from the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge incident, which was more recent, of course, than the Bunkerville affair. We won't get into that. I think we've covered other fresh material, a very fundamental material, the sovereignty of Clark County and that history, BLM agents being told, given a demonized version of the people of Nevada, of Southern Nevada, and going in a very paranoid fashion, training their gun sights on people, including children. We've covered that. We've covered huge amounts of land in Utah and Nevada being declared these national monuments, the whole philosophy of the federal government, where there's no humans, then they believe that that makes the environment better, when we've described that stewardship and husbandry of the land and farmers and ranchers play a key role in maintaining and improving the environment. I think these are the issues that get overlooked by the media's obsession with just the basic facts, that this is what happened in the spring of 2014. There was this standoff. Now there's this trial. The trial involves quasi-militia types. The media gives you that impression. And so I just wanted to get these fundamentals out there, Brianna. I think it paints a much broader and deeper picture, that someone, no matter where they come down on this issue, can get a much clearer view of reality now, thanks to what you've helped provide here. And so I'll follow up with you later, but I appreciate you being on this American Free Press podcast today.
Hey, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, any parting comments? Is there anything crucial that we might have not covered that you might want to just quickly point out? Or
no, I just like to ask people to study their rights, study the Constitution. If you don't know your rights, they're going to be taken from you. So you have to know them in order to protect them, because once your freedoms are lost, they're lost forever. It's a lot harder to get them back than it is to defend them.
Very well put. Well, thank you, Brianna, and we'll see you around.
All right. Sounds good. You have a great day.
All the best. You've been listening to an American Free Press podcast here on 9 January 2017. I'm Mark Anderson, roving editor.
Thank you.